For the grand finale of this retreat, the very last part. I'm just going to continue with the rest of the suttas, and then that will be it. And then whatever you have to do afterwards, please do so. We have been having a look at the Kausambya Sutta. I'm going to have a look at the rest of that sutta also very quickly, and then I'm going to move on to the very last two little bits and pieces at the very end there. What we are doing now is looking at the idea of how to develop these qualities of metta and compassion, how to do that in practice. And we have been looking at doing it by body, speech and mind. And now is a couple of more interesting little parts. So this Kausambya Sutta, I will just look at first of all. So yeah, this is how it goes next. Again, a bhikkhu uses things in common with his virtuous companions in the holy life without making reservations. He shares with them any gain of a kind that accords with the Dhamma and has been obtained in a way that accords with the Dhamma, including even the mere contents of his bowl. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord and to unity. So this is obviously about generosity, about just sharing everything you have in your monastic life. And of course, obviously, it goes for lay people just as much as it goes for monastics. But it's interesting, the idea that when you are generous towards others, you create a sense of harmony between people. If you give of your own things to somebody else, it creates a kind of natural bond, a natural understanding, I think, very often. This is what he's saying is not just how we act, but that we actually show that we're willing to sacrifice for somebody else, I think is part of what is going on here. Interesting, the idea that you give what has been obtained in accordance with the Dhamma, it means that it has been obtained in a righteous way, in a correct way. That's what it means. So when you give, the really valuable type of generosity, the generosity that really matters the most, is not the kind of generosity where you have got something in the wrong way and then give it to somebody else, but something when you have actually worked for it, and you feel that you are really worthy of that, and then you give it to somebody else, then it is a much more of a kind of renunciation and much more powerful act of generosity. So it accords with the Dhamma, it is righteously obtained, not by fraudulent means or whatever. So anyway, that just again shows us in Buddhism, the idea of generosity is always very important in the Buddhist teachings. That is just one aspect of that too. The next one we have, again, the bhikkhu dwells both in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life those virtues that are unbroken, untorn, unblotched, unmottled, liberating, commended by the wise, not misapprehended, and conducive to stillness. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord and to unity. So here the idea is simply that if you live well, if you practice virtue, here we're talking about the kind of virtue developed to a very high level. This is the virtue of those people who have called noble ones in Buddhism, and those people who have kind of seen the teachings, understood what they're all about, is what this really is referring to here. Again, when you live a virtuous lifestyle, there tends to be a natural degree of harmony there as a consequence. It's quite interesting, this little paragraph you're seeing right here. First of all, it kind of emphasizes the idea of the virtue being consistent, unbroken, untorn, unblotched. Consistency of virtue is what that means. Consistency of sila, both in terms of good behavior and avoiding bad behavior. Consistency is what really matters. The more consistency you have, the more powerful it becomes, the more it aids your ability to meditate on all of these kind of things. And again, this to be able to be consistent in our behavior actually is quite difficult. It's so easy to slip up a little bit, and then maybe you beat yourself up because you slipped up. Please don't do that. It's natural to slip up sometimes. So don't beat yourself up. Just instead of beating yourself up, it's usually very counterproductive because it blocks out your ability to reflect on it properly. Instead of beating yourself up, okay, I made a mistake. It's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. Why did it happen? Yeah. How come I make this mistake all the time? What's going on here? And when you don't beat yourself up for it, but you just look on it, what you've done with equanimity, and you start to understand the causality, why this is happening. That is what is really important. And once you understand why it is happening, then it becomes possible to change your behavior. So these are little tricks on how to learn to change behavior and get away from bad habits that we may have. So this is when it's important, yeah? So the consistency, again, the idea of commitment and perseverance on the path, so important to be able to reap the full benefits of this. So that's kind of the meaning with unbroken, untorn. Of course, very interesting that they are liberating, yeah? Sometimes people think that virtue binds you down, you have to follow rules. It is binding in one sense, but it is liberating in a much deeper sense. It liberates your mind from defilements, from oppression, from hindrances. It frees your mind internally, and that is what really matters. That's why it's liberating. So if you live a moral life, you feel free, even though you are actually following rules and that sort of thing. So this is kind of a misunderstanding by many people in the world that somehow morality is not liberating, it's kind of imprisoning you. It's the exact opposite, which really is the case. You're liberated from remorse, liberated from feeling bad about yourself, liberated because you feel good inside. Yeah, this is what really matters, of course. And then we have the idea, commended by the wise. It's nice to be commended by the wise, isn't it? I'd rather be commended by the scallywags of the world. We don't really care too much about what the scallywags say. But being commended by the wise is kind of handy. If the Buddha says good on you, then you know you're on the right track. Yeah. Then we have not misapprehended. Actually, that translation is not really all that good. It means not grasped, ungrasped at what it means. In other words, once your virtue becomes part of who you are, part of your psychology. And this happens at a certain point. Yeah, when you get enough insight into the teachings, it actually comes a point when this becomes part of who you are. At that point, you can't really offend against these principles anymore. Not in any serious way anyway, only in minor ways. So you don't have to grasp them. Before that point, you have to grasp a little bit, you have to hold on a little bit, because if you don't hold on, you're not going to be doing the right thing here. And then conducive to samadhi, yeah? One of those themes of meditation, of the spiritual path that is so important and so essential. And I already talked about this before, the idea that virtue, morality, your conduct, your character, who you are as a person, this is the foundation for your meditation practice. Get that right and meditation becomes possible. So again, this is one of the great themes in the teaching in the Dhamma. This is one of the interesting things when you read the sutras, that there's certain things that you see again and again and again, things that are repeated over from slightly different angles with slightly different emphasis. And this is one of those things. So this is a kind of really foundational aspect of the teaching. Some teachings are not as important or not as regularly talked about, and they're not as significant, but other things are. This is one of those things. Okay, the last one of these six things is, again, a monk dwells both in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life that view that is noble and emancipating, or liberating, if you like, and leads one who practices in accordance with it to the complete destruction, ending of suffering. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. So this is that view, that you insight that you is available in the Buddhist practice that comes at a certain point when your meditation deepens to a certain point. And that is the insight when you understand what these teachings really are about. You have that view that accords with the view of the Buddha. And that's when your virtue becomes perfected at that point. And of course, when you live with people like that, then it's easy. Because it's everything is natural, everything is straightforward. then know the teaching. Because you have internalized the teachings, it is the path has also been internalized. Because you know where happiness lies and where suffering lies, it means that you always act in accordance with the happiness of things. So in other words, you act according to morality, to those things that conduce to meditation practice and all of those kind of things. Because you know what it is. It makes no sense anymore to do anything which is wrong, because you know from personal experience that is suffering, that is leading in the wrong way. That's why you can't act wrongly anymore, because you just you have internalized that these things are not going to work out for you nor for anyone else. So those are those factors. There was really the three first ones that I wanted to emphasize the most, because they are directly about metta practice, which was kind of the theme of this. So then the Buddha summarizes, these are the six principles of cordiality that create love and respect and conduce to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. Okay, then I will go down to the last, very last little piece of the sutta called the Simile of the Saw. And now we have looked at how to kind of live with as much friendliness as we can in ordinary life, action, speech, and also in how we think. And now we're going to see how far it is possible to take this. This is what this Simile of the Saw is about. Bhikkhus, monks, nuns, lay people, everyone there. Even if bandits were to sever you savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handled saw, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. Herein, bhikkhus, you should train in this way. Our minds will remain unaffected. We shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare, with a mind of metta, of loving kindness, without inner hate. We shall abide pervading them with a mind imbued with loving kindness, and starting with them, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with metta, loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. This is how you should train, monks. Yeah, so this is one of those very, very well-known similes in the suttas, because it is such a powerful image, of these bandits coming, grabbing you, A number of bandits come, they grab you by the limbs, they pin you to the ground, they hold you down, and then they take out this big two-handled saw, and they start sawing your legs off and your arms off or whatever. And then the Buddha says, if you give rise to a mind of hostility at that point, you are not carrying out my teaching. He's pretty demanding, this Buddha, right? He's kind of asking for pretty high, pretty lofty stuff that he's asking from us. What is beautiful about this, what is powerful about this, is that please don't allow this to let you down and think that I can never do this, this is out of reach, this is impossible, how can anyone do this? Don't think like that. Think rather, the way to regard this is to think about this as an aspiration, is to think, wow, if that is possible, I would really love to be able to do that. How cool it is to be able to someone actually putting you down on the ground, Maybe we can get a volunteer afterwards here, we can just try it out. Putting it down on the ground, and you just, even though they kind of savagely beat you up and destroy your body, all you have is a mind of metta. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it remarkable that the mind can be developed to that level? That is what I think, and that is kind of, it's inspiring that these teachings actually have such an outcome that it's possible to develop the mind to that point. And that is what, when I read this, this is how I try to look at it. I don't try to say, I will never get there. Because then you are just letting yourself down and you make it impossible to get there if you think like that. So allow it to inspire you. Say, okay, I can't do this now. Fair enough. But let me just take baby steps. I'll take one step at a time. And see where it leads. And maybe one day it might actually lead to this kind of outcome. It's beautiful when you think about it in the right way. And that is what this really is about. So how can we do this? How is this possible? And of course, it comes back to all of those things that I was talking about before. You have this idea that when somebody does an evil act or a bad act, they are the ones who have the problem, not you. They are the ones who are going to suffer the consequences, yeah, of the bad acts for a long time into the future. They are like the sick man walking in the desert who's going to meet with calamity and disaster. Yeah? I like that word calamity. It kind of really drives home the point that somebody is heading for some bad stuff in the future. Yeah? So they are the ones that have a problem. You don't have a big problem. Yeah? They grab you. You are a virtuous person, right, living well. And they grab you. They pin you to the ground and start sawing you apart. How much bad karma is that? Enormous bad karma. They're going to feel terrible about themselves later on when they realize what they have done. He was a virtuous, kind person. Maybe someone who is a good meditator, who gets good samadhi. Maybe a stream entry if they kind of really grab the wrong person. Yeah. And they're going to feel terrible. They're going to suffer enormously from that. And when you, even though you are in tremendous pain at that time, if you are able to turn your mind around like that and understand they are going to receive much more suffering for that than you are, what you are getting is just peanuts compared to what they will be getting in the future, then of course you can start to have a mind of compassion. These people are deluded. They are stupid. They have no idea what they are doing. They are blind. They're walking around in the dark. They're lacking clear guidance in the world. And because of that, they are the ones who actually deserve compassion in that case. What about you? Well, if somebody, you know, pinned me to the ground and started sawing me apart, you know, cut there, cut here, whatever, you wouldn't live very long, right? Okay, it would be painful, but within a few minutes you would be dead. And when you're dead, you're out of here. Yeah, no problem. Okay, bye-bye, no issue. I'm dead now. Okay, now you guys, you sit there, you have your bad karma, and you're the ones who are going to suffer. I'm leaving. I'm going somewhere else. And if you lived well, maybe even going to a nice place in the future, yeah? Maybe you're happy to get rid of this body. This body was a bit of pain anyway. So now we can kind of move on to something else. But this is kind of the idea. You understand that if you are able to keep that good mind state and live in the right way, actually you are just creating even more goodness for yourself and helping yourself to move into the future, whereas they are doing the exact opposite. Is turning our usual reaction upside down and looking at things in a very different way. Yeah? And that can be done, says the Buddha. So he says, we shall just have this kind of kindness. And of course, interestingly, he says then, starting with them. Right? You start with these bandits when you do your loving kindness meditation. You don't start with somebody. It's easy to have kindness towards. You start with these bandits. Now, why is that? Because to be able to have metta, to have loving kindness to the whole world, the only way you're going to do that is not to have any blockages inside of you. These are obviously going to be the most obvious blockages. Yeah, people who are savagely hurting you. So you start with them. And if you're able to have metta towards them, then there's no limit to where you can have metta. You have metta, loving kindness, friendliness, goodwill towards everyone, everywhere in the entire universe. That's why you start with them. Get that blockage out of the way. Then it opens up. And then you have the ability to do it everywhere else. So make sure that you have no enemies in this world. Make sure that you are friends with everyone, that you have friendly goodwill towards all beings in this universe, regardless of who they are, regardless how evil you think they are. Make sure that you do that. There is no scope for enmity or anger in Buddhism. There's always scope for more compassion, more kindness, more understanding where people come from. There's that beautiful French saying, I grew up partly in France when I was a child, and a French saying which says something like, to understand all, to comprendre, to understand all is to pardon all, c'est tout pardonner. In other words, when you really understand somebody else, where they come from, why they are the way they are, if you really understand their conditioning, then you will always be able to forgive, because you know that they're just acting out that conditioning. They don't have much choice, and then forgiveness becomes possible. And then you do the loving kindness that has all these qualities. And the Buddha, of course, says, Bhikkhus, if you keep this advice on the simile of the saw constantly in mind, do you see any course of speech? Yeah, so just ordinary speech, trivial or gross, that you could not endure? And of course, no, Venerable Sir. Therefore, Bhikkhus, you should keep this advice of the simile of the saw constantly in mind. That would lead to your welfare and happiness for a long time. So there you are. Please keep that simile of the soul in mind. And then it will have the same kind of power. And then I want to come to the very last little passage. And that one I just skipped before. This is from the sutta called the Simile of the Cloth in the Middle Length Sayings of the Buddha. And this is just the standard way that the development of metta and compassion, etc., is described in the suttas by the Buddha. This is how it is described again and again in many different places. And it goes as follows. He abides pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he abides pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving-kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. Yeah? That's what you're supposed to do. So that's what you do when you sit down. In meditation, you pervade the whole world, up and down, absolutely everywhere, with a mind of loving kindness, with friendliness, with a goodwill towards all beings, visible, invisible, animal, human, whatever there is. Everyone is included in that. That's how what you do. So how do we do this in practice? And in practice, just a few hints for how to do this. First of all, it is not going to necessarily going to happen straight away. Many of these things you have to develop over time for this to happen. Yeah, even if it happens just a little bit, you should be very pleased with that, because it's not something that happens very naturally. Usually, you would develop your mind in deep meditation beforehand, before you actually come to this, and then this becomes possible. But basically, the idea is, and we saw this here already in the previous sutta, that you start off with not having any enmity to anyone. Yeah, you cannot really, that is going to block you straight away. And then, once you have established that mind has no enmity, you have to actually be able to see the good qualities of people or of beings. Yeah, it can also be beings of other kinds. And when you see those good qualities, you remind yourself, yeah, what do these qualities actually mean? What does the feeling of generosity mean? What does the feeling of kindness mean? And we all have some experience of those things, yeah? And when you remind yourself what those feelings are, and you know that there are lots of beings out there, sometimes non-human beings, lots of human beings that have these qualities, you start to feel, wow, what a wonderful thing it is to be able to share a universe, to share a planet with beings who have so many good qualities. So you focus on specifically on those good qualities, not on any particular person, but just the awareness, just the knowledge that there are beings out there with all these good qualities. And then that is goodwill, yeah? When you focus on good qualities, that by its very nature is goodwill. Is the opposite of anger, where you see the negative qualities in somebody. So that's really how you do that. This is one way of doing it anyway. And then when you build up that perception of all those good qualities, then you kind of naturally wish those people, those beings well, because they are worthy of your well-wishing. You feel these people are really worthy of this. So then you can say something simple. May all the beings there be happy and well. You don't have to say anything at all. It may already feel happy just by thinking like that. Then you just sit there and you feel the feeling here, and you keep your perception on a certain direction. Don't have no particular people. All these faceless people, all these faceless beings out there that have all these qualities. From a Buddhist point of view, there are not only humans, there are beings of all types in this universe. They are not really different from us, they are the same as us, except that they have developed the good qualities further. And so they have been reborn in a kind of different, not as humans, but somewhere else. Yeah. Because of that, and of course because they have developed very good qualities, they have those qualities right now where they are. So the universe is full of beings with very powerful, powerfully beautiful and marvelous spiritual qualities. When you think like that, you can kind of start to wish all these beings out there well, in the northern direction, east, west, south, up and down, and everywhere. This is just giving you a little bit of an idea how to do this. Sometimes it's nice to do a guided meditation on this as well, but the weekend retreat is perhaps a little bit too short for that. And then we have the then he says, so everywhere, right, with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant. In other words, much loving kindness, not kind of just a little bit, but lots of it, exalted. The point about this, when you develop these kind of mind states, your mind feels exalted. It feels like you have reached the highest state of consciousness. Yeah, you feel more pure. You feel better about yourself. You feel as if you are kind of merging into a different reality. This is why it is exalted. It's not, you don't feel conceited, because the sense of self is actually dying down at this particular point. But you know that this is a state of great purity and great beauty and great happiness. It's an exalted state of mind. It's the opposite if you have a very mean state of mind. You're very stingy, or you're very angry, and you kind of feel, or you're very, whatever it is, very jealous or whatever. And these feelings drag you down, and you feel like a small being in a sense, the opposite of being exalted. And here you feel the exact opposite, you feel exalted. So these are very, from a subjective point of view, very, very beautiful things. Immeasurable. Yeah, this mind which has no measure anymore. There's no kind of limits to this kind of mind. The feeling that the mind is kind of encompassing the whole world, which is kind of the idea here. Without hostility and without ill will. One of the little things in here which is interesting, it says that you do it to all as to himself. And I pointed this out before on these retreats. And a lot of Buddhist meditation is based on this particular phrase. So that you start off wishing yourself metta, wishing metta to yourself. I must admit, I always found that a little bit strange, that we should start focusing on ourselves. To me, it didn't make any sense. The point, rather, seems to be that we should have metta to everyone. Yeah, there should be no limits. And because we are included in everyone, we are part of that in a sense. But to focus directly on oneself, maybe this varies from person to person, but for me, it never really made much sense. One of my other monastic friends who investigated this at great length, and he wrote a long academic article on this, and very interesting article taking into account all kinds of sources. And he made a very convincing argument that that actually is not the original meaning of that word. The meaning is just that you do it to the whole world. That's really the actual meaning of that word. So usually these translations are very reliable, but occasionally there might be small points like that come out. So if you, I don't know, if you are like me and you find it a little bit strange to kind of direct it towards yourself, then you don't have to do that. If it comes naturally to direct it to yourself, I don't think it's wrong either. There's something that feels to me a little bit kind of self-centered about that. And I don't know, I feel a bit uneasy about that myself. But maybe I'm a bit weird, I'm not sure. Yeah. Anyway, so let's have a look at the last three, which are similar, very similar kind of things. So again, now we come to the other three. These are called the Brahma Viharas, the divine abidings. Just look at loving kindness, then comes compassion, then comes altruistic joy, it's called here, then equanimity. Yeah, there's a sequence of four of these divine abidings. Loving kindness, metta, always comes first. It's always the same sequence. This is the similar thing I was mentioning earlier on, when we look at how to overcome anger, metta is very strongly emphasized. And then if goodwill doesn't work, then we move on to compassion afterwards. And this is the same thing here again. Metta is always first. It's the foundation. Yeah, so once you can kind of give metta, loving kindness, goodwill to the whole world everywhere, once you can do that, then you can move on to the other ones. Yeah, so it's a bit of work for most people before you can move on to the other Brahma Viharas. In other words, my point is you can go a long, long way on the Buddhist path just by focusing on the first one. You don't have to worry too much about the other ones. But let's have a quick look at them anyway. So you abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around and everywhere, and around, everywhere, in all directions, hereby pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued by loving kindness, with compassion, thank you, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, without ill will. And the same thing with altruistic joy. This is mudita in Pali. And then with a mind imbued with equanimity. Likewise, the second, the third direction, the fourth, above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to himself. He abides pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with equanimity, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So the idea of compassion is it's quite closely related to the idea of metta, but the idea of compassion is the desire to free other people from suffering. Yeah? When you see people suffer, you have a reaction and you would like to help them. That's basically what compassion is. And this is, of course, one of the great qualities of the Buddha, has this great compassion. The Buddha's life was basically a life of compassion. The Buddha had done what he needed to do. There was nothing further for him to do. But he lived on simply out of compassion for the world, to teach them what he had discovered. So that was kind of the archetype of compassion in Buddhism. But again, compassion is a little bit of a two-edged sword. You have to have a very developed mind to be able to deal with compassion in the right way. Otherwise, it's easy to get a bit sad, perhaps, yeah, see all the suffering. It can drain you of energy rather than giving rise to energy. So you have to know how to do this in the right way. So you often it's good to do this kind of things maybe after you have some deep meditation experience already. Then you have the idea of altruistic joy. And the idea with this is usually that you rejoice in other people's success. Instead of feeling jealous or envious of other people, you think, you know, somebody says, oh, I had this wonderful meditation experience. And you think, ah, well done. Good on you. That's what a wonderful thing it is that you had that experience. And the kind of the nice thing about other people having good experiences is that you realize they are just like us. We're all basically the same. We all have a mind, right? And the mind is all you require. I usually, at the beginning of a retreat, I usually ask people if they have a mind, because if they haven't got a mind, then they're in the wrong place. So if you are a zombie, then you may have wasted your time over the weekend. But most people are not zombies, yeah? So if you have a mind, basically, that is what these teachings are for. Yeah, so you can kind of, okay, it's for me, you can say. So it is for you. And remember that. So in a very deep sense, we are pretty much exactly the same. We are the same, we are people always changing from one state to another one, but essentially we are very, very similar to each other. And that's the beautiful thing. If somebody else has success in a meditation, it kind of opens up the possibility for you. Yeah, because you have this essentially the same nature. That is the right way of thinking about it. You think, wow, how wonderful it is that you did that. Maybe there's hope for me as well. Yeah. So in monastic life, you find that some of the monks, you know, there's a lot of variety in how the abilities in meditation everywhere, also in monastic life. And it's wonderful to rejoice in those abilities of other, your fellow monastics. And you can take that. Obviously, that's a very positive and beautiful state of mind. And then in Buddhism, what is kind of strange is that the highest, the greatest, the final Brahma Vihara, the final divine abiding, is equanimity. Yeah, you've just gone through loving kindness, goodwill, compassion, rejoicing in other people's achievements, all of this. And somebody said, actually, equanimity is even better. Doesn't sound like it, right? How can equanimity? Equanimity means like you sit there like a stone, right? Don't move. And of course, that doesn't sound like very much. But the point here is that when we talk about equanimity in Buddhism, we're talking about a very profound state of mind that is only achieved through the deepest state of meditation. Yeah, so it is a state where you are no longer moved by the world, where the mind is almost in perfect balance, where happiness and suffering no longer moves you whatsoever, so you are completely stable. And this is one of the reasons why it's such a powerful state, because it allows for insight into those phenomena that are the most hard to get insight into, because your mind is rock solid. As long as you have some degree of happiness in the mind, as long as there's some degree of, you know, metta and all these kind of things, the mind is still, you still have a little bit of a desire for those things, because they're very positive things. Then it's more difficult to actually have those insights because of that. So equanimity is considered like the highest state in Buddhism. And also, it actually is also a more pleasant state at the end of the day. hard to understand that. How can equanimity be more pleasant than happiness? That's what the Buddha says. So equanimity is a different type of happiness. It is more pleasant than ordinary happiness. So you can think about that one and see if you can sort that out. Many of these things you're going to have to experience for yourself to be able to really understand what they are about. So those are the suttas for this retreat. And I'm not going to take it any further than that. That's the very last thing that I was talking about there are some of the most profound things on the Buddhist path. So just use them as a matter of inspiration to kind of give you a bit of guidance, something to lead you onwards in your life, on your spiritual path, whatever that spiritual path is. And that is really all I want to say, except for wishing you all the best of luck with your practice. And of course, if you ever want to come back, you're more than welcome to come back here. This retreat center is here for everyone to use. That's why we built it. And it's wonderful to have these facilities here. If you want to take anything back home with you from this retreat, there's one thing more than anything else that I would recommend you to do. Maybe two things. But one thing is that one of them is the most important one of all. And that is to remember that if you're going to have success in your practice, the idea of commitment and perseverance is so important. And the only way you're going to be able to commit and persevere is by having a regular diet of Dhamma talks. Yeah? From the Buddha, from other spiritual teachers who you enjoy listening to. A regular diet that reminds you of what you have to do. It's easy when you go to a retreat center, when you are reminded all the time about what you're supposed to do, it's quite easy to follow the instructions and do what is right. Once you go back into your ordinary busy life, much more difficult to do these things. But then when you have a regular input, somebody to remind you of what you're supposed to be doing, that is how you keep going, and that is how you have that, get that commitment to living a good life and living a spiritual life, if you like. So this is the very foundation of how spiritual practice comes about. And apart from that, there is one other thing, only one very simple thing that you need to take with you in your ordinary life, and that is the idea of kindness. Kindness encompasses all of those things that I've been talking about, yeah? It encompasses any kind of morality, whether it's avoiding doing the bad or doing the good, whether it's verbal, bodily, or mental. All of these things are part of kindness. Kindness encompasses the sense of goodwill, of compassion. It encompasses the sense of generosity. And it even, in a sense, encompasses wisdom and meditation as well. So if you're able to remember that one word in your daily life, kindness, yeah, and as a general support for that, the support of allowing yourself to have that regular input of spiritual teachings, if you can do those two things, and if you can do it consistently, then you're going to go a very long way on the spiritual path. Okay, so that is all. I just maybe I should finish off just by thanking some of the wonderful people who are behind, have done so much work. This retreat center doesn't just happen by itself, right? It's not the devas who keep it clean or anything. Actually, there are devas. That's really unfair. It is the devas who keep them clean, but they are kind of human. Devas in human form, yeah? It's a different kind of devas. And we have some very wonderful supporters who look after this place. People like Bianca, who has been the retreat manager for you. People like the caretakers who stay here full time and look after this place. People like Leha, who do a lot of work behind the scenes. People people like Burr, who's not even here. Yeah, and many others. Not least of all, Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm's idea to actually start to have this retreat center. He put an enormous amount of work to get it going. There are lots of people behind this. And what a wonderful thing it is that people do this out of their free desire, just to wanting to help. The food we had on the weekend, yesterday, that came from supporters driving all the way from the city out here just to feed us. Isn't that amazing? They just want to feed us. They don't charge anything. They don't do anything. They just bring food for 60 people out of the goodness of their heart. Isn't that amazing? And we are the beneficiaries of that. It's really fantastic that these things happen. And this is what happens when you live in a spiritual community where everybody tries to live well. You get this wonderful outcome sometimes. So a big sadhu to everyone who has made this possible here. So sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. That's it. So very nice to have you all here. And let's just finish off by paying respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. For those of you who wish, there is no obligation to do that. I should maybe say at the very end that one of the reasons I like to pay respect to the Buddha is because it is really paying respect to the qualities of the Buddha. Yeah, the qualities of compassion, wisdom, kindness, and all of these kind of things. Anyway, so that's a nice way of looking at it.
Sāpatipanno bhagavato